Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Cool. So without any further ado, I want to say hi to Rich. Hey, Rich, how are you doing?
Hey, Carlos, how are you doing? I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good to see you. Which part of the world are you right now?
I'm actually in the UK. So I was in San Francisco the week that it started to be locked down and just about got out by the skin of my teeth. And that's kind of made the next few months very interesting. So for the time being, I'm locked down here in the UK, which has been okay.
Cool. Well, you know, it's funny, we're talking about before that I heard of Trader.io only a year ago or so, even though you guys been in business for a long time. Why don't you give me more details about your company and then yourself?
Sure. So, Trader.io has been around now since 2012. There were three of us that started the company back then. And, the vision for us, the idea for us was to enable less technical people to utilize APIs and the technology that we had available to us. And back then, you know, we had this kind of big bet that more and more people were going to consume more and more software and more individualized SaaS tools. And as they did so, providing configurability via an API would be a huge asset to them. And you kind of have this challenge where you have the people that use the tools, they understand the business importance behind them, but they don't have this technical skill set to go and expand that usage and build automation around it. And so for us, we wanted to find a way that we could kind of harness that technology and enable people to do a lot more with the tooling that they already had. And that really was the kind of birth of Trey. It took us a very long time to build out the product. It took us the best part of 4 years of grinding out on the engineering side. As you point out, I think we've come on the scene in the last sort of 3 or 4 years or so, and it's really picked up pace in the last, I would say, 2 to 3 years. So we're excited to come and talk on shows like this.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about your story. So first of all, how did you start thinking about building a digital product to where you are today?
I mean, it was a long journey of trying many different things. I think I did a part technical, part business degree in 2002 to 2006. And as I finished that, I actually met one of my co-founders shortly afterwards, who was at a university nearby. He was in a research lab working with Tim Berners-Lee on the semantic web. And the two of us, you know, we were from a place that didn't have a great technology scene. There wasn't a great deal else going on around us. And so we just ended up tinkering with as many different product ideas as we could. We loved trying out new technologies. We were fortunate that the iPhone was released not too long after. So we got to try building out all sorts of different apps and experimentation. And, you know, through that curiosity, we were able to start to learn about how people use products, the things that make them want to buy products. And that time spent kind of without too much purpose, I think, led us on a path to ultimately go and build a company. And to me, that feels like a very commonly trodden path for a lot of product people. And I think it's a great way to explore and learn and try out new things without sort of compressing your idea too early on.
Definitely. I resonate with that statement as well, because I've been always trying to solve my own problems, and I see a lot of curious minds out there also trying to do the same. And what starts with your own problem sometimes turns into a massive opportunity that is affecting millions of people, like seems to be the case here. So what is the scale of your business today?
So from a scale perspective, you know, we've grown exceptionally quickly over the last few years. We currently have just under 250 people working at Trey. We're headquartered in San Francisco. We have thousands of customers. And, you know, we're at a point now where we do many billions of transactions across the platform every month. And that was always the dream, that we would get to this point where people would be able to come and talk to us about our product, suggest ideas, it would have an impact on their job and their career and enable them to do something that they would have been able to have done otherwise. And for a long time, as we were building the product and kind of coming around to doing that, that was the thing that was the most exciting about this. You know, one day maybe we could be one of those companies where their technology is utilized in that way. And you know, it's been really exciting to get to this point, and we feel like it's just kind of just kicking off, really.
Now, I love to learn about those stories, because sometimes people read an article on the news about a funding round or a successful young entrepreneur who suddenly became famous, but they don't cover the years and years of hard work and hustle without almost anybody noticing it. So if you look at other graphs of other successful startups, like Airbnb comes to mind, like how they started around 2010 and they were growing slowly, slowly, slowly. And then suddenly there were a couple of aha moments and they started growing exponentially. In your case, has there been any of those moments where you noticed that you went from, oh my God, nobody knows about us, to what's going on? We can't support all the users that we have.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I stopped believing those stories. I started to think that that was some sort of Hollywood fairy tale that happened in product land. And, you know, we were building for many years and many times. You know, you get that disheartening feeling where you put something out, nobody tries it. You have this mindset in your head as a product person that you build something great and people are going to, you know, just sign up and tweet about it and interact with you in some way. And it didn't happen. And for us, you know, it was a slow burn over the first 3 or 4 years. We then picked up the first wave of customers, and there was a point at which it just kind of cascaded. And yeah, we had that feeling of, okay, how do we keep up with this? How do we continue to support all of the new customers that are coming in? We feel like we're not getting on top of the new leads that we're speaking to. We had to scale the go-to-market piece very fast. And I think if you come from the perspective of always being a builder and thinking in that way, you know, you're not quite as prepared as you ought to be when that happens. And for us, it was a thrilling time. I think starting to see the brand get banded around and people talking about it that weren't us was one of the indicators there. And then before you knew it, you know, we suddenly had more and more people across the company, and you kind of walk into a room and see somebody working on something that, you know, you didn't know existed or weren't aware of. And that's you have a number of those moments, which is which really sort of takes you back and makes you think about the stuff that happened before.
So I also want to learn about your own learning journey, because you went from starting a company and building the first product now to being the CEO of a 250 plus people company distributed around the world. So how did you learn to become CEO, and what was kind of some of those breakthroughs that you had to adapt to the new scenario?
I think it's the CEO role is glamorized a lot, but I think it's like anything. You know, you've got to be prepared to learn. You've got to be humble enough to know that you certainly don't have all the answers. And the key for me was always finding people that were at least 2 or 3 major steps ahead and trying to learn from them and get ahead of things that I wasn't aware that was going to happen, or pick up the stuff that was further down the line. Being able to communicate really clearly will get you out of a lot of difficult situations as you scale quickly and you're kind of learning on the job as a CEO. But, you know, it kind of never ends. I think the scale that we're at today will be very different to the scale that we're at in a year's time. And the people that are able to kind of grow through those stages are able to continually reinvent themselves in the same way that you think about a product roadmap itself. How do you get your product ready for the next level of scale isn't that different from how you think about how you scale yourself and present yourself to be able to provide for people that work at the company, you know, as you continue to go through those motions.
It's very interesting to me to hear you talk about that, because based on my experience also interviewing other CEOs, I can recognize the pattern. They treat a problem like a product, and how can they scale themselves, how they can scale an organization beyond just the tech piece. And I think that having that mindset, it's really powerful, and obviously you're a testament of that. So let's talk a little bit more about product managers and how they can also interact with this set of tools. Because I remember back in the day, I come from an engineering background, it was really, really important to know how to code or how to run SQL. Otherwise, you couldn't really do certain things. Now, there's much more local or visual tools that allow non-technical people really be dangerous and at least be able to communicate with technical people in a different capacity. So what would you say are, like, what's the role that Trey is playing there, and how do you see product managers interacting with your product?
Yeah, I mean, Trey at its essence is an enabling technology. What we do is we bring an ability and a skill set to people that don't have the fundamental, you know, technical background or requirements to go out and do these things. And from a product management perspective, this is particularly prevalent in thinking through integrations and connecting into other platforms. You know, as you know from being a product manager, as you think about scaling your own product, you have to think about how you tackle getting into additional ecosystems, the value of the data that gets either streamed through you or you provide back out to create that network effect. And what's particularly challenging about that is how you kind of scale and connect all of those different platforms from an engineering standpoint. If you think about it from a purely engineering resource perspective, if you have a team of engineers, you want them working on product functionality. You don't want them working on supporting and scaling integrations. And yet the people that understand the business purpose for these integrations are the product managers. They're the ones that can tell you why this is going to be valuable for that customer, why that's going to make a difference, why it needs to work in that specific way. And so what we try and do is put that power back into the product manager's hands. You know, the Trey embedded platform allows you to effectively connect to over 500 different services out the gate, and you can build integrations within our service in a visual way as a product manager that will enable your end customers to connect to these other tools. And it's done in a completely white label fashion. And so what that essentially allows you to do is you're removing the burden of scaling out all these integrations from an engineering perspective. You're putting the power back in the product manager's hands, and you're able to get the measurable ROI of that because we provide all the reporting and insight that comes with doing so. And that in itself kind of shows you the way that this trend is moving. I think, you know, engineers, you want them working on gnarly and difficult technical problems. They're the people that can go and bring those things to life. For the bits that need interconnecting, for the parts where you're, you know, transforming data or connecting different services together, a platform like Trey is the ideal way to go out and do that. And that's you know, the vision that we had. That's the thing that we're trying to bring to the world.
And was that the same vision that you had back in 2014 or so?
2012. So we actually started out by connecting up our email, our inboxes to lots of other platforms. And we were kind of lazy in the work that we were doing, and we wanted to use technology to carry out some of that for us. We wanted it to automate our work. So we built these email rules, which connected into all these other services and would carry out actions on our behalf. You know, when a customer emailed us, we could tell if they were a hot lead in Salesforce. We could use this other contextual data to go and carry out the subsequent actions as a result. And as that evolved, we realized that, you know, we could modularize email in that service, and we could provide this interconnectivity layer, which would become a huge enabler for people further down the line. What happened as we went through that process is that we began working with a lot of customers who wanted to support their end customers in connectivity. And that's where we realized that opening up the APIs for our platform would be the perfect way to do that. And so we have this extremely powerful enterprise grade integration engine, and it allows you to connect, you know, externally through your own product and internally to build out your own automation framework. And so it has evolved over time, and I think that's important from a product standpoint, in that, you know, you're always kind of learning. You're always learning from the audience around you. You have your end vision of the thing that you were trying to do, and the path that it takes is one that you need to be prepared to go back and forth on.
So let me double click on that, because I think it's important for the audience to know that, okay, you start with an idea, you test it, you start with a very specific use case, and then that can grow. In your particular case, you're building a platform that connects so many different use cases. So it's, I can't even imagine how hard it must be to really prioritize that and pick the right resources for each of the integrations. So how do you guys go about understanding your customers and prioritizing the next set of integrations or the next big thing for your product?
I think, yeah, so where I would start with that is I guess I have a slightly different view to the way many products are conceived or even best practice is considered, in that, you know, a well thought out and executed product idea through to delivery involves a lot of analysis, a lot of customer interviews, a lot of other stages that effectively will reduce risk as you go through to launch. For us, we really didn't do much of that. And we were so kind of passionate about the problem that we were solving. We were so clear on how we wanted this product to be that we sort of ignored most of the fundamentals and kind of built in exactly the way that you're not meant to. And, you know, I think whilst I'm not a complete advocate of that, I think it is important in some ways. I think that there are many products that wouldn't exist if people listened to the exact logic of the people around them or perhaps weren't very good at asking the right questions. But you kind of have to build the things that your gut tells you to get this thing off the ground. Now, where that evolves is as you scale through and as you found that product market fit, you know, prioritization becomes key. And I think there are two tracks that you have to be aware of here. One is understanding your customers intimately today and understanding the needs that they have, not only in scaling and maintaining on the platform that you have, but the things that you aren't able to do for them that are valuable. And that involves a lot of customer work, a lot of customer interaction. It involves joint workshops. It involves getting as close to your customer as you humanly can. And then secondarily, on the other track is you've got to be, you know, well ahead from an innovation standpoint. You've got to be thinking about where are you aiming at from a product perspective? What are the changes that you think are going to come 2 to 3 years down the line? How do you ensure that you're always pushing yourself to innovate toward those? And it's a tough thing to balance because, you know, from an investment perspective, you'll want to make sure that you're doing the right thing by the customer all the time. But if you lose that innovation streak, then you'll become the encumbrance that you're trying to replace in the market. And so, you know, the prioritization piece is important for us from an integration perspective. We've built out a lot of tooling, which puts that back in the hands of our customers. And as a result, they can actually, you know, the more tooling that you can build that allows them to go and solve their own problems, the more powerful you become as a platform. And we very much take that view. That was the early ethos of the service should be that you shouldn't be restricted by the things that we build. You should always be able to go and expand your usage beyond that.
I've seen that happening across other top SaaS companies, how they are structuring product teams. So part of the team is focused on pure innovation and really attracting new users or crazy moonshots in a way. And there's another team more focused on growing existing user personas. And I like that combination because that keeps you fresh. It's not just about achieving that local maximum sometimes, but also keeping that big ideas in mind and trying. So in your case, obviously, you hired other product leaders in the organization. But at the same time, as a founder and CEO, you probably have your own opinions. So how do you balance the influence that you want to have over the roadmap versus the influence that you want your product teams to also have?
I mean, our product managers are probably all tapping on their screen right now and preparing for whatever I'm about to say. But yeah, that was one of the hardest things for me as the company grew, in that myself and the CTO, you know, effectively were the product. It was the thing we talked about 24 hours a day. It was the thing that we worked on in all hours of the day. And as we scaled, I knew that the reins had to be handed over to somebody that could do a better job than I could in scaling that organization and building out a really effective team. I think in order to do that job well, you need to build a great relationship with that person, and you need to be able to communicate to them around where, you know, it sort of goes back to that vision piece. Where is this thing heading? What does it need to get to? Where are you trying to deliver your product vision? How are you trying to drive everything towards that? And if you're able to do that well, a great product manager or product leader will dissect that, and they'll feed it back to you, and they'll help you understand the stages that it's going to take to get there. And of course, you're always going to, you know, stick your oar in, and you're going to log into Figma and look at the designs before they're ready and put comments on stuff like every annoying product CEO that's ever existed. But I think for the right team, you know, that's received in the right way, and you've got to be prepared to be overruled. If you truly hand this stuff off, then that's what comes with it. And, you know, we've been super fortunate with the team we've been able to curate at Trey. We have a wonderful product leader that works really closely with myself and Ali, and we feel that we're very much on the same page. And that comes from, you know, that first interview that you have, how you kind of build that relationship up, because you have to have a very aligned view on the type of product organization you're going to build. Because ultimately, that'll, the thing that will frustrate you if you get that piece wrong is the, you know, that it's not what gets delivered, it's how it gets built, and that'll be the frustrating aspect that comes alongside it.
One of the things that I'm always very curious about as well is, how do other CEOs spend their time? We always talk about, you know, bigger themes such as hiring, user research, and others, but each person has its own playbook. So in your own experience, how do you say that, what are those major themes where you like to invest your time?
Yeah, I mean, it changes so frequently. It changes, you know, if you think about a fast growth company, you're basically packing years of growth into probably 6 month periods. And so at any point, your role as CEO evolves very quickly in different directions. You know, over time for me, the key changes have been, you know, working with our executive team, leading the hiring for future executives, working very closely on the strategy side. And that is essentially making sure that, you know, you're all driving in the right direction. That means aligning and working closely with your board. It means aligning and directing the company from a vision perspective to where you're trying to get, what sort of product you're trying to build, and importantly, the culture that it takes to get there. And then a lot of that comes down to how you message and work with your fellow executives, because they then represent that within each aspect of their team. And it all has to cascade together in the right way. So for me, you know, a lot of my time is spent on that. It's spent in meetings, working with people, driving and enforcing the things that are important to the company at any given time. But most importantly, you know, my role is to enable everybody else. I regularly tell people that I'm the least skilled person in the company. I'm the one that is there to make sure that all the people that are great at the specific roles that they have are enabled to go out and do that, and for me to get out of the way to help drive that. And so as you go through those stages, those are the kind of changes that happen. There'll be a time where you're heads down on fundraising and building investor relationships for a very long time. But I think you've got to be clear in driving that strategy is the most important aspect of the role, in my opinion.
Very, thank you for your honesty, because, you know, like sometimes I get very high level answers, and I like to really dig deep and understand what's in each CEO's mind, how they spend their time. And it's really fascinating. I'm also learning a lot myself. Personally, I also started product school 6 years ago. It was just an idea. It was and now we're at a very different scale. So as you said, like trying to enable others in a productive way, and being there for them, but not just try to micromanage, is definitely a hard lesson that I had to invest a lot of time and money into it until I'm still learning, but I think I'm getting better at it, obviously. Cool. So I also want to talk about tools for a bit. I guess that you guys drink your own champagne and use Tray internally to connect different products, but what else is on your product stack?
I mean, you're totally right. Every department interconnects everything they do with Tray, and we have some really amazing projects internally, from how we report and show data between different departments through to automating lead funnels, automating, you know, feature flags with tools like LaunchDarkly in our product department. You know, some of the other key product-led tools that we use, FullStory, we're a huge fan of, Product Board we use internally, Segment we have a great relationship with and is a key part of our stack. And all of these tools, you know, represent the things that we believe to be true for where software is heading, which is best of breed solutions, great APIs that underpin them, perfect for connectivity, and they give you the purview into the specific problem you're trying to solve, whilst helping you kind of build out this joined framework when you use a platform like Tray. So the nice thing for us is that we get to build great partnerships as we scale out, as we've done. We love to accentuate the value of tools that exist within the ecosystem, and the stories that we tell about how we use them internally become a big part of our own marketing and our partners' marketing, which really kind of nicely ties the whole thing together. And for product nerds like us, that's a really fun part of the job.
I've noticed that trend as well. Instead of focusing so much on just one single platform to cover every single need of your company, I've seen now microservices that become really the best at the specific use cases, and then they all play nicely together. So kind of replacing just your traditional CRM or ERP platform. So it's a good, and I think part of it as well is that now there's the product managers matter. I remember when I started product school, or even before when I was working in product, I was piggybacking on PowerPoint, spreadsheets, and tools that weren't really created for PMs. Now there's this new wave of tools that really treat this with the respect that it deserves. And I think especially because PMs are tech savvy and they are also connecting the dots with many other teams, it's enabling a lot of innovation by democratizing access to data and access to things that before used to be almost a black box for whoever is running that specific department.
Yeah, I mean, I think the unspoken or dirty secret about product managers is they're a key part of your go-to-market function. And the reason that we've seen so much tooling built around these folks is that they'll be able to tell you, you know, which customers are engaged, which are churning. They'll be working very closely with your product marketing team, which is really the life and breath of, you know, inspiring prospects and driving people to your platform. And, you know, people think of product managers as, you know, creatives that come in and draw wireframes and go out and do all this stuff. No, that's a very small part of the job. It's heavily process oriented. It's really getting in and deeply understanding the mechanics that drive the business and how your product has an impact on your customers' lives. And as a result, you know, it's created this huge market for people to build tooling around that because it moves the needle on your business. A very well-run product organization will be able to dictate and help you forecast how well your future sales are going to go because you'll understand so much more about your customer base as a result, and they help stay in tune with every other department within the business. So I think we'll continue to see the market share of that department expand significantly over time because there is so much useful intelligence contained within that part of the business.
But Rich, it's been fantastic to share this time with you and learn from you. As we wrap things up, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Oh, I mean, I would be remiss to say go and check out Tray.io. You know, we are here to help automate any of your internal or external processes. And you know, I really want to give a shout out to Product School. As somebody that kind of fumbled their way through product management for a very long time, having resources like the ones that you will have built and events that you can attend for free like you've set up really makes a huge difference to the rest of the community. So just a quick thanks really for having me on and building this community.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.